expressions of interest. Take one for the idea of a new radio show, he said, trying to sound enthusiastic. That everything in the world reduces goes without saying, down to its essence, its entropic state of constituent parts, and then all ends. All. Movement and velocity, even the state of rocks and stones, disintegrate as the attraction between things dwindles. The bonds dissolve, and all things are disconnectedly connected. Prior to my belief that everything would come back to haunt me, I felt quite normal. It has to be said that those things I held in hope are also things that held me back. They qualified my habits and gave vent to my inhibitions, disguising, in a way, the quiet shyness I had cultivated since a child to save myself from becoming too much a focus of attention. I was off the radar, so to speak. My parents thought I would eventually get bored, join the Coast Guard or the police or something. Lack of qualifications was not necessarily seen as any sort of a disadvantage. At some point I realized that in order to inhabit something other than myself, I simply had to imagine what it would be like if I were that otherness. Not to imagine that it were me, if that's understandable, that while my life was different, I, in it, was exactly the same. Okay, I'm not a writer. I'm a brain surgeon. Done. A philosopher. So very done. A woman. Ditto. A historical figure. Yeah, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The other thing I quickly realized is that lists, by and large, are best kept for shopping and poetry. This was my first lesson in fiction, that it is not lies, it is more a convenience, a reinterpretation of the order of things. I left home equipped with what they call secondary school qualifications. They told me I should write about what I know, which I have always presumed to mean, don't write above your station. So I can start there. High school. Dropout, concerned with little more than having sex and taking drugs. Career-wise, this wasn't something I could put on my CV. I had by this time had 17 or so fillings in my mouth, but trouble with wisdom teeth was yet to come, late 20s, and I was happily jet-setting around the world with plastic bags full of dirty laundry, popping in on relatives anywhere and everywhere, and they in turn indulged me along with my questionable hygiene and manners. But this isn't about me. This is about the fiction I live in. This is about my life made up. What follows now are snippets, vignettes, tableaus, pieces, drawn together from different parts that actually have no connection with each other, but that I hope will somehow become more than the sum of their parts.
You have to steer clear of these clowns, he said, trying to douse the flames at the bottom of the stairs. It's no good pretending it's funny, and he wiped a mawkish grin of breath from the mirror. You're not my father, I said, chanting the national anthem from memory,
and the circle of things spiraled outward suddenly, grasping at everything from gas explosions to hurricane straws.
"I can't see them anywhere," he said again,
trying to smash open the window with a spanner.
"How do you know what's coming?" I said. "There's a whole government lying to people, and clowns are on the fringes."
"Yes, but not for long," and he tied the rope around my waist tighter, telling me not to look so worried. I decided to check out how people were feeling. But they were all too busy to tell me, apart from the clowns, who were really angry.
"Why did you bother coming back, knowing that you were going to take it that far?" they said. "What makes this country great is people dying to get in here in the first place." "This is why we study stars," they said. condone certain forms of violence, they said. Split atoms, they said. And I suppose love's got nothing to do with it, I said, lowering myself into the cave. You can suppose what you like, given how the smoke is filling the top half of the house and we can't even break open the windows. I told you this would never work.
It's why we're here, isn't it? I said.
That, my father said, isn't even a question. How can you possibly wonder why we are here at a time like this? Of course, conversations with my father rounded me as a person, but they weren't everything. They didn't complete me. I had to leave home for that, to fill in, if you will, the blanks. Often, these came from moments of self-reflection.
I don't want to be living on painkillers for the rest of my life.
He rounded on himself in the kitchen, pulled a glass from the cupboard and looked at it as if to smash it against the laminate flooring before pausing, hand with glass raised above his head, somehow finding an ounce of decorum in having stopped himself from making both a mess and a mistake. He was alone. He would have to clear up the broken glass. He was talking to himself. A breath was uttered in place of a sigh. A noose around his psyche lifted. He forgave everything, reading down a mental list in no particular order. Check. 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 Briefly stumbling upon feminism in general, wrestling with his misogyny, as he had done 100 times before, and agreeing with his other self's concern with the imprisoning terms of patriarchy. Check. Some will stop at nothing to have giant food shops built on vacant land. Some will rail at the misfortune of a dog to have an owner that neglects to pick up its turds from the pavement in a purpose-made bag. Some find cause in education and how to, just in case of emergency, fix something, although it may never break. And some, after travelling miles to sit in a largely empty church, will suffer the ignominy of inequality through the intransience of faith, or fall asleep trying. While I, he thought to himself, pondering the glass in his hand, threatened to entrify an innocent object of glass and disabuse it of its function by breaking it instead of wishing there were some whisky about to swill in its containment and thereafter argue aimlessly over whether the glass were half this or half that, and forget for a moment that robot airplanes controlled remotely by princes of the realm kill and maim innocents as well as those deemed fit not to stand trial. Guilty until dismembered, automated judge and jury sipping coffee in a control room somewhere in the Yankee Midwest. The regent prince, dreaming of one day usurping their brother and becoming the first red-headed sovereign to have gotten away with wearing a Nazi uniform and still become king. It'll never work. He went to the bathroom, considered a wank before shaving. He wished he had the physique of John Redwood, as he inspected himself in the mirror, not Eric Pickles. Physique, mind you, not psyche, these things matter, not just in relation to disdaining the poor for it being their fault, but in respect of understanding that those who feel least threatened often feel the most influential, and succouring them in that delusion is what makes the world go round when you hold sway. And should the poles begin to slip even further away from your liking, there is always the threat of war in some far-off, forgotten smidge of empire to unite the nation around you. Huzzah! Acting like anything royal, weddings, anniversaries, death, coronation, etc., tick the box of queen, country, or skiving foreigners, and you will unite the nation behind your flag of convenience as if Hitler were lapping at the shores and King Canute were sat on his throne wishing the tide away.
Please go away.
He groaned. Sighed. Job done. Time to shave. Uh,
I was listening the other day to something I made some time ago. It reminded me of a more innocent time when I thought the future was far off. But all too quickly, my past caught up with me, and I have to live in the present. Anyway, the thing was, I was listening to something that made a lot of sense. Something I had said long, long ago.
Mommy, I don't like mushrooms.
No, it wasn't that. There was something else. Something I couldn't quite grasp. Something je ne sais quoi. Something more, well, more or less. I don't want to get bogged down in specifics. Something that could easily be nothing, yet be something I meant to mean nothing. Like jealousy, or me in an invisibility suit. Poof! Way to go. But it wasn't meant to be. I realized I was broke and couldn't take myself back to the counter. I no longer fit into the 32-inch waist me that I used to be. Boxers, briefs, or slips. I still couldn't really make up my mind, but somehow that all felt so beneath me. That wasn't what people saw me as. Unless I had my pants on over top of my trousers. I listened to myself and found what I was looking for. So I pressed the pause button. Is there a god in the refrigerator who lets there be light when you open the door? Lately I feel I've gotten back to normal. Not that anyone will ever know that, because they won't read this. And the fact that I am positioning myself as normal as opposed to wacky, weird, wonderful, eccentric, cool, avant-garde, nouveau riche, où est la toilette? Let's face it, it's just going to put people off. I wanted to be a cartoonist in another life, but couldn't stand the idea of having to draw dogs and cats to make a living, and my social commentary is about as incisive as trying to cut a slice of bread with a brick. Because the truth is, you can't make a living from social commentary these days, visually or literally, unless you are willing to prostitute yourself to the peccadilloes of others. Besides 50 shades of colorless sexual fantasy, is people's affection for their animals, or in other words, pets. Not their children, not their relatives, not their political views, but the animals that are able to attach themselves to people's lives in the search for little more than food, anti-flea devices, and an oven tray full of fine gravel left in the kitchen where humans prepare food. What is that smell? Pets and sex is what consumes most people's leisure time apart from worrying about the future, having children and watching the value of their home, car, and television set shrink to the size of a neutered pathogen, all in the time it takes for me to read this out loud to you. Or for you to read it. But then, no one reads anymore. So that's never going to happen, unless I add a world-weary bit about how my cat is walking all over my desktop and purring for my attention as we speak. Sometimes things seem autobiographical when they're not. Sometimes they're close. It's that idea that fiction is something we use to make truth more visible, to more easily understand, or get closer to truth. In fact, there is no ultimate truth, which is probably true. Once again, I'm forcing myself into the box, as if there is no tomorrow, as if I might be run over by a bus, gunned down by a madman, hit by a tree, or a person carrying a piece of a tree, or drowned in a puddle before being forced through a garden shredder or carried the length of the interstate by a motorhome boggling along on the inside. Oh, please stop. Please stop. You're dragging me to my death. Things have really been bothering me lately. Blood being thicker than water, for one. I've come to think the analogy refers to being thicker than two planks, rather than thicker as in oil and water. And the family of man, as men like to call it, tends to pretend to get along only insofar as their deeply held prejudices lie bubbling just below the surface.
Don't get me mad!
That, and a pointed stick, is probably what started the first significant political conflict. Then people had to come up with inventive ways of making martyrs out of revolutionaries. As in, one person's revolutionary is another person's terrorist bent on destroying civilization as we know it. So in order to feel safe as a society, we should get rid of all these fuddy-duddy liberties that undeserving citizens use to their advantage just because no one is willing to put the bastards out of their misery before someone notices they're making some sort of sense. Did I mention this doesn't have a lot to do with Christmas? Christmas and dentists. Why, in evolutionary terms, does that toothache, or abscess, always happen on Christmas Eve, Friday, when you know no one in the known universe of dentistry will be available for the next week and a half because they're spending all the profits from your face on a snowless Christmas in some gated community hotel on the west coast of Africa? And you know this because if you do survive the hell of a toothache over Christmas, they will be telling you about their holiday while you are sat trapped open-mouthed in the torture chamber of a chair.
Oh, yeah, we went to Liberia to get away from it all. The daiquiris were to die for, and we learned everything there is to know about Marcus Garvey and the Negroes of the early 20th century.
Meanwhile, you lie there blinded by the overhead inspection lamp, trying to sound interested. Reliving that scene from Marathon Man where Laurence Olivier shows Dustin Hoffman how to do evil method acting the British way, all the way from Terence Stamp to Eric Pickles. No, not Eric Pickles. I get him on the brain. I mean Alfred Molina playing Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man. What a great baddie. Or is it, no, Ralph Fiennes as Voldemort in Harry Potter. Yeah, that is so like Olivier. Who knows? Anyway, the civil partner and I have decided to get married. I understand it's a clever ruse by the government to encourage people who thought they were married to get married all over again in the hope of reviving a flagging economy. Makes sense to me. Of course, everything can easily return to the political, and that isn't necessarily what makes sense, but it's easy to get fixated on something and then you kind of zoom in on it at the expense of everything else. It's tunnel vision. Look it up in a thesaurus, for God's sake. What am I?
Your English teacher?
Stuck between the glass frames, I microscopically scale down my ambitions to suit the lighting. Jack-o'-lantern glow from inside, pumpkin head, the wheels turn on the trolley of unmarked graves and notices of redundancy text from the ministry, and every receiver loses faith before signal, realizing the quiet isn't quite such a bad thing. Noise being the price we pay to offload with online goss-blogged hates, peeves, and bored little mantras that mediate between us and the concept of heaven in a creationist's idea of our relationship with monkeys and planets where NRA presidents go mad with Alzheimer's and become quickly out of date, let alone out of touch, with the trigger point of their flash in the pan. Everyone is famous for 15 minutes of restaurant reviews and the drudgery of keeping skeletons in closets full of old records and filing cabinets with carefully archived pornography on obsolete laserdisc technology and contraband video outlets gone bust behind the adult-only doors that once looked out on the busy street through feminist picket lines and letterbox transformations of airmail into Twitter accounts. That means nothing until you are popular enough to sell advertising, which is why everyone uploads video clips of their cat sleeping in funny poses because they're super glued to the television set pretending to be a digital aerial for the sake of their owner's one-stop shot at being rich and famous for infringing copyright, let alone animal rights legislation, for which they are banned from the interweb and everything holier than thou, thought to have pre-existed the faked Landing on the Moon documentary about the life of David Attenborough and his prehistorically challenged brother, who acted like a criminal, prisoner of war, Gandhi, and even a dinosaur, all for the sake of making movies larger than life that exposed child stars to the kind of popcorn-cringing red carpet treatment we used to think the reserve of chimney sweeps and altered states of well-being. until the sickness took us to our beds, where we had to fornicate with viruses trying to destroy our immune system because we were told to replicate antibodies by embracing dis-ease and locking children into a cycle of digital dependency before the next apocalypse winging martyr comes along, pretending to be the prophet of a new beginning, but turns out to just want to marry a pop star and sell underwear on the back of having size 13 shoes and being able to charge hundreds of thousands of pounds for clinically depressed people to sit and watch him, her, kick the crap out of a ball. Sometimes everything doesn't make sense, but it's better to let it flow than to try and structure it into something. I mean, fiction is an artifice, but you can make too much artifice out of artifice, and in a way the truth ends up falling away, and it just becomes entertainment. Unlike this, if you're still listening. You think the rest of how it feels, like a tall tree ablaze, with lightning striking its outstretched arms, and nowhere for it to grow, so withers, love, and down, down it goes into a quick sketch of a spot of trouble, roughed in by pencil marks, rubbed out by carving knives. To the left you can make out guns, spotted in the hallway, in the umbrella stand, the coats armored, the hats metal, the boots hobnail, and desert camouflaged so they fit right in. Meanwhile, all the managers have taken the coats of the rich and famous, their tails between their upturned gaze, suspended on the bridge like the nose pieces of 3D glasses. They find it easier to view the world as it is, with constant updates, Twitter feeds, blog rolls, and opportunities to take rights in perpetuity until they become big enough to land-grab the whole virtual property market, and the suicide rate in what used to be called Second Life becomes astronomical, because no one goes there anymore, so it's a kind of ghetto amongst the games community who trade in secret arms, virtually, wait in dark corners of the internet to ambush digitized superheroes, and feel like they really are part of the underworld. There is that much a sense of reality going on out there. I logged in with my girlfriend, my boyfriend, while my friend, who was a boy in a girl's body, who dreamt up war games in their bedroom and got depressed about the state of the world economy to begin with. It was because their pocket money was worth less in real terms. And I said, look, at least once you've turned everything on, you can write as quick as you like about anything and everything, as long as you don't mind the amount of slave labor and rape of resources that your laptop, mobile, me, startup company represents. And they changed tack then, opening up a course on the adult education world, where minors aren't allowed to think about things unless it's pure unadulterated violence and gun crime, which makes the world seem a safer place only if you have one too. And besides, if things get really bad, you can always put yourself out of your own misery. Then they left, saying there wasn't much else to do except sit the whole thing out and wait for the next wave to hit us, which made me feel half like a beach and half like a sex-crazed pop idol with a passable voice and a cucumber down my leather trousers playing classical music on a pier where the ships come in and ridicule the guy surrounded by seagulls who is attempting to play Greensleeves on an out-of-tune guitar against the backdrop of a raging Force 10 gale. Man, nothing is easy in this life. That's when I decided I'd had enough. I wanted to phone my mother, who wants to be called by her real name. Her maiden name, I mean, which makes us sound unrelated. That's not entirely true, but it reminds me that no matter what things are called, I've always had faith that, like a rose by any other name, things will eventually work out. We're blessed with fiction, in a sense. Literature is all about fiction. So are words. So is language. At best, close approximations of what we mean, never quite exactly.
The worst of Farley Harquin Tarkery's dilemma was his innate ability to annoy complete strangers, due in no small part to his halitosis. It was an unusual form that spread rather more like body odour than breath,
It seemed to seep from the very pores of his face, rather like methane gas does in certain parts of Siberia, as the permafrost melts, causing the acceleration of climate change. However, that being an issue contended by potential sponsors of this program, we shall leave that metaphor and its attendant impact on any listener's imagination hanging in the air like a proverbial hole in the ozone layer. In short, whether Farley Harquin was speaking, or staring open-mouthed in amazement at some previously unimagined articulation of human ingenuity, his ruinous breath preceded him in such a manner that his sparkling personality and wit were forever tainted by the excellent pollutants that he transported about behind his sealed lips, waiting for the unfortunate moment when a mere expression of opinion would transport his poisonous vapours into the world around him, much in the same way that an overripe egg transports the stench of sulphur. This, of course, would mean nothing to that minority in the population who, for genetic or environmental reasons, have no olfactory sensation whatsoever. Yet even they could be reduced to imminent exit on the arrival of Farley Thackeray. For more recently, his age had accelerated past him and confronted him just outside the corner shop, situated at one of life's many crossroads. Farley had been anointed with yet another social disadvantage that in some respects put his halitotic condition completely in the shade. Farley had more recently become incontinent, and this being recent, rather than finding some convenient solution, of which there is a multitude, a quick Google or Jeeves or two on the subject and a scrolling down the paid-for clicks, one can easily find an alternative reality almost unrecognizable as our own, in which urinal malfunctions and other gynecological misfortunes are laid bare on page after page of blog, tweet, and forum. If you were an alien visitor to our little globe and decided to find out about things by searching continent in, with the hope of GPSing oneself and seeing if any other aliens were nearby, you would be entering this netherworld of discontinence, a hidden layer of stigma lying just beneath the crust of Earth on the surface of which we place so much importance. A similar parallel universe exists under the search term erectile dysfunction, a world similar to our own in all respects, but for the emphasis on libido, sex drive, and the commercialization of male sexual organs. Farley had yet to confront his body's cri de coeur, shall we say. Being in denial about the incontinence is just one of those things, this silly mistake. Won't happen again, don't think anyone noticed. Leaving us all, where Farley is concerned, with a job to do just in saying,
"Hello, Father. How are you, old chap?"
And finally, perhaps truth is where we all go when we're alone. And so sometimes it's something that needs to be passed around like a gift. The whiskey you gave me, a birthday gift ritual, easily made best. Was, I expect, something you hoped I would comment upon, its taste, odure, the essence of, etc., all things that add contentment to its look and feel. So I have made a list of things I thought you should know, as you are so far away now that shouting, let alone my own counsel, is indistinct and might seem unclear. The first pang to hit the palate are the things you told me in the weeks before our visit. They hint at deeper machinations, secret agendas, an ennui, if that's the right word, you reserve for my advice or consideration. Then, with a sharper intake, a secondary bite hits the tongue, a distinct anger which is hard to locate at first, but which has aged for, I'm guessing here, 10 years or more, soaked in wooden words of fear and disavowance, words twisted into cursing your mother, words, I think that's what they're called, that somehow fail to describe the hurt and shame I swallowed with that first sip as I tried to understand what the gift you gave me tastes like, so I can pass from this far and uncomfortable distance my thoughts on it to you. And so that is the end of the first episode of Expressions of Interest. I hope there has been something that you found amusing or of interest. And I hope you can tune in again. My name is Mac Dunlop, and thank you for listening.